May 13, 2022. This is The Better Life. I'm your host, Timothy Lawson. Living a better life means taking a break every once in a while when you need it. And that's what happened last week. It was a busy week. I'm sure... Look, we as humans, I think, grow tired not only of other people talking about how busy they are, but even ourselves, right? I grow tired of hearing myself say, "Oh, busy week. Oh, busy week. Oh, things are happening. Busy week." But that's what happened. And not only was it a busy week, it was the sort of the perfect storm for no podcast. In that, personal life was busy, professional life was busy. A couple hopes that I had on maybe scheduling an interview, they didn't fall through. And by the time Friday came around, I was like, well, I'm not going to force this. I'm just going to, I'm not going to lie. I was kind of in a weird funk myself. And so I was like, yeah, I'm going to let this one go. And we'll come back the following week. With that, in that moment where I decided, you know what, I'm just going to let this one go. Not going to worry about it. It's never fun as a content creator to feel like maybe you've let down your audience or that you're not being as consistent, not only for yourself. I think content creators grow critical of themselves on consistency, even as self-criticism, right? Not even as let down to their audience, but that's what happens sometimes. And when I made that decision, I was like, you know what? May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and it's something that it's a topic I take very seriously. And, you know, what a better month, what a better time to talk about this, to talk about mental health inside of gambling, maybe even on the fringes of some of the things we experience as sports bettors and casino gamers, gamblers, and gambling in general. And so I started doing a little research or some thought, not research, but I started putting some thought into, well, what would that look like? What would I do if I did at least one, maybe more episodes that, you know, are themed with mental health without being repetitive, without being redundant. And I came up with what I think is going to be a fantastic lineup of guests. So this week, well, let me start backwards. Towards the end of the month, I should have Rufus Peabody, who, if you follow him on Twitter, or if you've been paying attention at all, he has been a little more open about mental health within being a sports bettor, a professional gambler, and hopefully we'll have him on both traditionally, learning about him as a gambler, as we typically do here on The Better Life, and then also talk about the mental health aspect. Between now and then, hope to have Richard Munchkin on the podcast, talk about being an AP and some of the maybe mental strains that come with that. But this week, I wanted to start this off with a human being that I know is fascinated with other humans. That is a student of the human condition, which is Mr. Gil Alexander. So we're going to start off with him. We talk about mental health in sports, mental health as sports bettors, mental health as just our own criticism of ourselves and what that looks like, and a number of other topics. This one I wanted to be a little more open-ended. I had a few prompts that I asked that I had ready for Gil. Otherwise, I just sort of wanted the topics to come as they did. And I think it was a great starting point for this little series on addressing mental health in the gambling space. Enjoy. Make sure you sort of knew where the conversation might go. Gil Alexander, host of A Numbers Game, longtime friend of The Better Life and Tim Lawson much prior to The Better Life. Sir, May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and I wanted to touch on mental health in a number of different ways this month. We're going to kick off with you. I have Richard Munchkin coming on in the coming weeks, talking about being an AP and mental health around that. Rufus Peabody should be on later in the month to talk about his perspective. But you, I know, are an observer of the humankind in many ways, especially in sports betting. So I wanted your perspective. But let's start with mental health growing as a topic, really, in society. It feels like, you know, 10 years ago, mental health was still something that just the emotional people needed to talk about. Now it seems like we're trying to make it a priority in many facets of life. What has been your observation on mental health as it's become a priority in our society?
Well, I think the more that it's out there, the more that we talk about such things, the better, right? I think that the fact that it's a mainstream topic can only do good. Now, what's interesting to me is that, you know, there's so many different perspectives on it, right? So on the one hand, you will hear some people view it as a weakness that, you know, we have, let's say, a generation that is more focused on that than we were in older generations. And so some older demographics, you'll hear some other people, some other pundits say how, oh, you know, they need to get over it. Everything is so fragile now and delicate. We'll also see, like, within the sports, you know, within sports specifically, most recently, we had a, you know, Naomi Osaka is the person that leaps to mind for me as someone who's been open about how she didn't derive as much enjoyment from tennis, multiple Grand Slam winner. She famously, you know, would break down after certain matches. She just said she wasn't enjoying herself as much. And it came to a head, I think, most recently at Indian Wells. Now, she has since performed quite well and has tried to have a more, you know, tried to take in tennis in a more jovial way since. But at Indian Wells, she, you know, someone in the stands yelled, "You suck." She reacted to it. She became very distraught on the court. She asked for the microphone if she could say something. In her post-match press conference, she cited the history of that tournament, how it affected the Williams sisters some 20 years ago. And I was just a, you know, long-winded way of setting up my reaction to that, which was I was upset that some people it's very easy to flippantly in sports media and also in sports betting media, because there was some of it in sports betting media. It's very easy to immediately go to the very lazy, oh, she's a pro athlete and she should know this is part of the territory and she should toughen up and all that stuff. And great. I'm glad that people think that if that's what they want to think. Everyone's entitled to their opinion. But I do think it's a very unevolved way of looking at things and a very lazy conclusion. And I think people gravitate towards what they think is going to be an easily liked comment on social media or an easily, you know, it's a comment that will garner easy support, when instead of looking at it as, you know what, maybe I've never been a pro athlete myself. Maybe I've never been a 24-year-old at this, you know, at the top of their game who has to deal with all this other stuff, who hasn't been in a tennis cocoon for their entire lives. They don't know what it's like to be on that stage. None of us do. And so, you know, it's never a bad thing when there's more empathy and more of an ability to try to put yourself in someone else's shoes. But do I think that that's ever going to change? And that the lowest common denominator response is going to be one of toughen up? I don't, but I do wish it would change to the better.
Athletes have embraced mental health more and more over the years. I believe it was Kevin Love had a really great article in The Athletic, if that's right. The Players Tribune, maybe it was. And about his mental health and sort of, and it was sort of an earlier, larger piece, right? We had heard so many, like in public or in press releases or notices or whatever. Oh, so-and-so is taking time off for mental health, or people have mentioned it, or they've done campaigns. But it was the first time that I think a lot of people saw a player from the big three leagues sort of do a long pouring piece of like, no, seriously, like this is tough sometimes, you know. And something I think about it every time I see someone go on social media and just berate players and teams for not performing the way they were supposed to correlate with their betting interests or their fantasy interests. Oh, fantasy players were the worst at this, right? Just tweeting at players about not getting more points or whatever. What responsibility should we be accountable for that? I guess is what I'm saying. Should we wouldn't let people bully each other the way we will let people treat athletes. But like, as you mentioned, we look at athletes as professionals, that this is the role that they're in. Do you feel like we have any need to be more accountable of our peers and our colleagues speaking about athletes in these terrible ways or directly to them, the same way we would if they were targeting people who weren't making millions every year.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, we should, if we were being good about it, right? Like, we should absolutely be treating them, I would even say, even more respectfully. Like, here's the thing about all this, right? Like, it's super easy and cowardly, quite frankly. Like, it doesn't take any courage to sit in the anonymity of your mom's basement and troll other people. By the way, it doesn't have to be athletes, can be members of the media, can be whatever public figure, right? There's no courage involved in that. There's nothing like what those people do every day, people who achieve, whether it's athletically or otherwise, and put themselves out there on a daily basis and perform on a daily basis or a weekly basis, whatever it is, that takes courage, right? That takes, people who take risks doing that every day, who put themselves out there and leaves themselves vulnerable. But now, does that translate to, if we lived in a perfect world, Tim, everyone would understand that and everyone would behave accordingly. But sadly, human beings suck, right? Human nature is not great. History has shown us this. And so, I mean, this is the planet we live on, you know? And I just, this randomly just came into my head right now. There's a documentary, and I wish I remembered the name of it. But again, back to tennis for a second. Marty Fish is a sort of, he was a great American tennis player about a decade ago. At one time, people thought he would be, you know, one of the great players in the world. Him and Andy Roddick came up together. People are far more familiar with Andy Roddick. But anyway, there's this documentary about Marty Fish, and he is the voice of the documentary. It's about him, and he is the guy behind the documentary. It basically talks about how he broke down at a U.S. Open tennis match some 7-8 years ago. I happened unknowingly, right? The only U.S. Open men's tennis match I've ever attended in my life happened to be that match. And I had no idea what was happening in front of me, right? So imagine I was just watching a tennis match between Marty Fish and Gilles Simone, I believe it was. And in Marty Fish's head, it was complete chaos. His entire world was crumbling. Everything that he'd worked for in his life was crumbling in his head. And none of us can know exactly, even despite his attempts to express it as articulately as he could, or as vividly as he could in this documentary, none of us could have related to that. And so I just, having attended that match, not knowing that this was happening right before my eyes, it also just sort of, it really drives home the point that none of us can have any clue what it takes to perform on the highest level, right? And just getting back to that original point, none of us can appreciate what these people are doing. And so to sit there and cast stones, it's just the most cowardly thing in the world, Tim. And it's just, do I think it's ever going to change? No. Do we have a responsibility? Well, I mean, I would like to, like, I can only do my part, right?
Right.
I will try to do that as compassionately and as thoughtfully as I can on a day-to-day basis when these things come up. Do I expect that I will be perfect doing it? No, but I can only do my best. Do I think others will treat it as lovingly? Probably not. Many will, most won't.
So let's shift this now, looking at the betting side of this, I'm glad we got a chance to talk about athletes and sports, because that's we this is stuff that we bet on, and really thinking about the human experience as an athlete, I think is both, you know, it's responsible for us to keep that stuff in mind, and also useful, right? To consider. Now, looking at betting, there, you know, gambling or sports betting is now legal in upwards of 30 states now. In some states there's, you know, 10, 12 more operators. It's been never been easier for bettors to get down. Have you noticed, or have you speculated, any effect that the casual mentioning of losing that has been put out by companies on like social media. Do you think we're going to see a long-term effect on that, on people's mental health? In that I feel like every day there's just, you know, when a team is down, we see tweets with GIFs of like, oh, here's a live look at Mavericks bettors, right? And they're angry and upset. And it almost feels like it's normalizing losing, right? Like this is just the experience that you're going to have. Do you think that that's going to have a negative impact?
By the way, brief aside, the name of that documentary for anybody who's interested about Marty Fish, I am being told here, is Untold Breaking Point.
There you go.
Thank you to Deborah Song for pushing that in front of
me. With the assist. Thank you, Deborah.
With the assist. Let me just sort of address what you were saying, though, which is like, and you said, take it as I want to. So I will. I think, like, would it be realistic to think that no one who is new to sports betting will ever be adversely affected in it? And I'm talking about in a serious way by chronic losing and the things that have plagued gamblers from the beginning of time, which is betting over one's head and really causing damage to their own lives and their own families' lives through irresponsible betting. I don't think that's realistic at all to think that won't happen. Sadly, millions of people are new to sports betting and, you know, new legalized jurisdictions. It is only a numbers game, right? It's only math to know that a certain percentage is going to fall into the pitfalls that have always plagued gamblers. Now, I try, just speaking for myself, on daily shows to make it as thoughtful and as deliberate, educational as I can when approaching the subject of sports betting. But, you know, people are going to do what they're going to do. They're going to listen in some cases. They're either, you know, or not listen. And yeah, do I think that it's an issue? You know, Bill Krakenberger and I talk about it, not every Thursday, but we have a regular Thursday spot where we talk for an hour and it does come up. And Bill Krakenberger is sort of a famous gambler who, you know, is very honest about how much he bets, but he's worried about that, right? Yeah. Because it's not only sports betting. Like, we just had the Kentucky Derby this past weekend, Tim. And we as sports bettors, and I'm not going to speak for all sports bettors, but for a lot of us, we've never won a bet on a horse in our lives. Like, seriously, like, I'm 1 in 5 million betting horses in my entire life. Like, yeah. American Pharoah is the only horse I ever hit in any of these Triple Crown races. And this past week's a great example, right? A 80-1 long shot wins out of nowhere. It wasn't even supposed to be in the race. And a lot of people lost a lot more money than they had any idea they were going to lose this past weekend betting a horse race. Then there's boxing, right? Canelo Alvarez ends up losing a fight where a lot of people trusted, you know, by the way, Canelo Alvarez, by many accounts, got destroyed in that fight, right? And only lost 115, 113 on all three scorecards. So in other words, he had to get destroyed to barely lose on judges' scorecards. So there's all kinds of, and I'm just using two examples from this past weekend, right? Which I sort of dubbed irresponsible betting Saturday, because it's a horse race and it's a boxing match. And say what you will about, you know, boxing, it ain't the most kosher sport in the world, I think people would agree on. So I'm just saying, that's just from this past weekend, Tim. So are there people who probably lost their shirts in an irresponsible way this past weekend just on those two events alone? Absolutely. Are you likely to hear about it? No.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, but it does worry me because, you know, I'll wrap up the answer with this. I've been betting sports in some fashion since I was a little kid. My parents weren't from this country. I didn't learn it from them. It was something that I was wired to do, right? It was just my own innate interest in the subject. If I had a child who expressed interest in betting, I would probably not trust that child. Let's say they wanted to do it seriously. I would probably not trust that child to do it on their own seriously for years until I recognized that kid understood it back and forth and forth and back. And it takes years to truly understand the math involved in all of it. And it's like, you got to really take it seriously. And it's one thing to do it for entertainment, but for every person who's able to say, I'm going to Vegas and I'm only going to lose this $300. There's another person who says, I'm only going to lose this $300. And they end up losing an extra zero to that.
One of the things that I have struggled with the most in my evolution as a gambler, I'm better at it now, but I'm not perfect at it, is if I do in fact lose when either lost a little bit more than I maybe had planned, or something that I'm still working on where I hit this high water mark and I don't set a good enough floor to trigger, okay, it's time to call it a day. And the way I talk to myself when I realize I've made that mistake, it's really easy to look inward and start lashing insults on yourself and being like, I'm so stupid. Why did I do that? If I'd only done this. It's something that I year to year try to incrementally improve on. Have you ever experienced that? And I'm not asking you, maybe not specifically when it comes to losses, but the being overly critical of yourself in a way that maybe you wouldn't otherwise in other aspects of your life.
All right. Well, let me just give you an example from the last 2 days, right? So I bet tennis. Okay. So I crunch numbers. I originate tennis. So I look at all the numbers and there were a few tennis matches, two yesterday, one this morning, right? Which were huge dogs. Yesterday it was Lauren Davis and Madison Brangle. If you're not a big tennis fan, you won't know who these people are.
You don't tell us who Madison Brangle is, Miguel. You don't tell us.
And this morning, Petra Martic. And all three of them, I had leans towards the dogs, all three of them. And for whatever reason, I didn't trust my numbers enough to play them, right? And Tim, the level of internal self-loathing cannot be measured, yeah. Right? So it's like, here, I didn't lose any money, right? I didn't lose a penny. I didn't bet them. But I lost the hypothetical winning money. Right. And so it's kind of like that stock market mentality. Do you feel worse when you lose money on a stock or when you don't buy one that ultimately soars long term? And there's something about the psychology of humans where the latter hurts way more. And so that's the kind of thing where it's like, okay, I haven't spoken until you asked me that question just now. Right. I haven't spoken that to anybody. It just lives inside rattling around my brain and I just kind of eat that emotion. Now, it doesn't affect my day-to-day life, right? I'm not like despondent about it outwardly, but since we're talking about mental health, to be a sports bettor, every single day you have to deal with all kinds of psychology quirks like that, right? It's a reflection of the human condition. So there's any number of things in your everyday life where you're like, you regret, oh, I wish I had gotten the cold cut combo instead of the meatball sandwich. God, I'm an idiot. I hated that I wasted a meal on that crappy meatball sandwich. You know, we deal with little stuff like that every day, right? And in gambling, it's just magnified. It's that on steroids. And that's just one example, right? From just the last couple of days. So all that stuff is like super interesting to me. It's why I started a podcast on sports betting over a decade ago. As you know, like I just view it as a reflection of the human condition in general, because every little betting thing is just representative of something else in life, you know, that you wouldn't think of. That's a day-to-day action or a day-to-day event. And so dealing with that, though, on a gambling level is so specific. Like, of all my friends, like if I have 100 friends in my life going back as early as I can remember in DC to ones I just met here in the last month, let's say. Not that I have any new friends in the last month, Tim, I'm lying. But
you don't, I know for a fact you don't have time to make friends.
I know. I have no time to make friends. I have no time for new human beings in my life. So I literally, like, if I think about all of my friends, like, and I'm like, okay, Gil, how many people of that group can deal with the ups and downs of that on a daily basis in the very deliberate, even-keeled manner that you can. And I'm not trying to, and I'm not even saying that in a chest flexing kind of way. I'm just saying that's how I was born, right? That's how I was wired. You said you're going to have Rufus on soon on your podcast. Like, that's how he was born. That's how he was wired. But like all of my friends, I think it's the null set, Tim. Like, I don't know one of them that can deal with it that way. They're great at other things that I couldn't possibly do. But just in this case, it just takes a very specific person, I think.
So something I said on the Better Life, I don't know if I actually, I may have edited it out now that I think about it. So, well, either way, I'll say it here. You know, you go through life, people ask you these questions. Oh, what's one thing, if you go back 20 years, what's one thing you would change about yourself or whatever? My answer to that question often is I would remove the hardwired instinct I have to gamble. I've probably lost tens of thousands of dollars over the course of my lifetime on gambling, right? I didn't become a good bettor until like 2 years ago. I've been doing this for a lot longer than that.
Nobody is good at first. Nobody is, right?
And there's a good chance, I can only assume, I'm not going to keep the edge that I have for as long as I need to overcome whatever I've lost learning how to be this good. And so when I look at that, when I look at the moments where I've walked out of a casino empty-handed, where I've walked away from a football game thinking, why am I even bothering with this anymore? The juggling of, okay, I just had a horrible day, but if I now that I go upstairs to hang out with my wife, I can't bring one ounce of this emotion up there because it's not her fault. Seriously.
It's not her fault. That is true.
I mean, Drew Dinsick and I had a great conversation about this, about how the biggest emotional challenge that bettors have is you can't let your family be impacted by the emotional impacts of betting. And so going back to what would I change about myself, if I could go back to being a little kid and hearing that I could wager money on an event and all of a sudden being fascinated with that, I would turn that hardwire off and try to experience life otherwise.
That is fascinating, right? That is fascinating on so many levels, because I totally hear what you're saying, right? And then I'm thinking, okay, would I do that to myself? Like, if I could do that, would I turn off that hard wiring? And the answer is no, because to do so would completely change the human being that I am.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it is so inherent in my DNA strain. Again, it was not a learned behavior. I don't come from a background where my dad took me to the horse racing. You know, to the horse track, right? That wasn't in my family. My brother isn't like this. It's just me. Baseball cards from the moment pulling out the Washington Post sports section, reading every word of it. My parents would have to walk over me, right? Because I was so involved in it at 6 years old. Watching my first, Skins game, lost my appetite. Baseball card collecting. Then I found the price guide. Oh my God, these things are worth something. Right. So like my oldest, most fond, my most fond memories make that the person that I am. So it's like an existential thing, what you just said, right? Where it gets to the point where you're like, oh man, I cannot remove that from me, because then I'm like, who am I at that point?
Yeah. I mean, it's like I say, I go through the whole exercise and explaining that and everything. Of course, take it with a grain of salt, and that I know that I can't do that, right? Give me the actual ability to do that. Like, give me the button to make it happen. Who knows if I actually press it, right? But like, just exercise of like really critically thinking about, man, who knows? But the it's easy now to say, okay, I love gambling and I love being a gambler, because I'm finally not only good at it in a lot of aspects, but like understand it and can be more responsible with it. I mean, Gil, when I first played blackjack, I was splitting tens, and I just think like,
that's a 20, sir. You should probably just hold there.
Right. And I was in Barcelona, and the Spaniards were gasping, right? They were like, what is this crazy American doing? I lucked out that I got to the point where I am now. Not most people you know, thankfully, we have a lot of content out there that I think can help steer people a certain way. But
Right. Because in the end, it's been great to both of us, not only from a gambling standpoint, but we both ended up, you know, vocationally right in it as well. So, but we are the exception, not the rule, right?
Yeah. So gambling can be, this is something, one of the things I want to talk to Richard Munchkin on Gambling with an Edge. He often speaks to, or at least comments on, the loneliness of being an AP, right? When, you know, you're on the road, stuff like that. And I find that I'm so excited to talk to him about that, because I think that loneliness as a gambler is a real thing, even when you're just a normal gambler, because as you pointed out, not everybody's built like this. Not everybody's willing to do this. And one of the things that inspired The Better Life was, you know, I don't have friends to go to the casino with to sit around and watch sports that I have action on. Gambling was a very lonely thing for me for a long time. Like, it's what I did, and that was it.
So that's, again, fascinating on so many levels, right? So Richard Munchkin, the loneliness of being an AP, an advantage player, is a very specific loneliness, right?
Right.
They are literally scouring the earth. All right, maybe this country, right? Scouring this country for the next advantage play. Maybe it's a machine, maybe it's a dealer, right? Maybe it's whatever they're into at that moment. And it's a fascinating life to observe, let alone imagine living it inside your brain, right?
Yeah.
The loneliness of that, because that's a very specific loneliness. What I was just describing before, your word is loneliness, but I wouldn't say it's a loneliness for me, but dealing with the self-loathing of having not played those tennis plays that I mentioned earlier. I don't view that as a loneliness. I view that as my internal conversation, my introspection that very few other people can actually relate to.
Sure.
And it's not a conversation that is that fascinating to anyone else because it's not them, right? It might be interesting to another better because it's relatable, but it's not like a conversation that, unless we happen to get there on a show, right, where the conversation drifts into that, where I would ever bring it up openly and talk about, because it's not that interesting, right? It's more important. Like, you have to put everything in perspective. So my girlfriend has a little girl, right, who's now 15 years old, about to be 15. And I've known her since she was 6 years old, right? There's nothing more important to me than every little thing that ever happened in her life, right? From when she was a little girl to whatever she experienced, things she said, our interactions, helping her with math, whatever the little thing was. I recognize that my little stupid bets have no importance based on shaping her as a human being, right?
Right.
I'm not sure if everybody has that perspective, you know? So like, that's also, you have to also have the ability, while it's super important to you and is part of your DNA, it also in the perspective of life, ain't that important unless it's affecting you adversely, which was the previous conversation you and I had, right? Unless it's really negatively impacting your life, that's a different story.
So,
yeah.
So I'm curious. So, but have you, I think what the loneliness part, what I was trying to go with that is most people don't have people inside, like in their immediate network who are also gamblers. Right.
Correct.
And it becomes almost fat. Like when you, like, you know, now of course we have Twitter and you can just find gambling Twitter. Right. But like 10, 12, 20 years ago, that wasn't the case. Did you ever experience any sort of feeling of like isolation from
system, no.
You know, no?
No, because I was always able to multitask, right? I was always able to have that life going on and also have more of the reality life at the same time, right? If that makes sense. Maybe that's not the right way to phrase it. But yeah. Like my day-to-day life was happening. Like even now, like, so you and I are having a conversation, right?
Yeah.
I'm also following Yulia Putintseva facing Garbiñe Muguruza on my phone, right? Now I'm aware of what the score is. I'm still able to have a cogent conversation with you, right? So it's like there's two things happening at once. And I recognize that what you and I are talking about is far more important than my bet, even though I'm rooting on my underdog bet on Putin Seva. How did I get to that? What did you say that triggered that? I'm trying to think.
Like isolation and like...
Yeah, no, I don't. I never felt isolated about it. Like I got like my mother would never understand. My father would never quite understand. My brother wouldn't. My best friends in the world love sports and love to bet, but not at the level that I do or in the weeds like I do. Right. Hey, can you put $100 on this horse for me? Sure, Tommy. I'm happy to. Hey, could you put $100 on this? Sure. Oh, man, we lost. Yeah, we did. You know, like, I mean, it doesn't get much past that.
Yeah.
So it's, again, it's like this really fascinating world that exists inside your brain and is also so like, so let me just give you a story. So my dad just passed away like 3 months ago. And one of the more fascinating things that I noticed about the, you know, I was on the air talking about him and I was just, you know, I was inconsolable as any of us would be when your dad passes away. And, you know, I think about him every day. You know what I was constantly aware of even in those days afterwards? Some scores in sports.
Yeah.
Right? Like it wasn't like my brain could completely shut that off. Now, part of that was because it's my job, right? But like I would have thought, okay, if my father's going to pass away, the next day, I'm not going to care about the scores at whatever tennis tournament is happening. But it almost served as a necessary distraction. Like I went into work. It was during COVID, so we couldn't fly home. We had to bury my father a week after religious law typically dictates. But COVID, as it has for so many things, threw that into the loop. And so for that week, I still went into work and I was still aware of sports betting and spreads and all that kind of thing. And I have to tell you, like, it was great because otherwise I would have just mired more and more into it. So, I mean, I don't even know how I got to this, but I can't remember what your trigger was on your question. But like, so in some regards, like that's how deep it is. By the way, I know I have a friend whose father passed away and he said he had a bet going during his dad's funeral. Right.
Sorry, I shouldn't laugh, but
right. But like, yeah. So think about that. Whatever strain he has in his DNA, and by the way, he's been betting for as long as I have, hasn't learned a goddamn thing, this guy, in 30 years. Right. But it's so part and parcel with his existence on Earth that even when he was mourning his father's passing, as they were putting his father into the ground, he was sweating a bet.
Yeah. One thing that's difficult in when talk about mental health and the experiences that you have within gambling is when we think about mental health, we think about sort of like the negative effects of it, right? We think about all the ways that there could be negative effects to your mental health, stuff like that. But there are ways to we've discussed them a bit here. I know you and Bill talk about them often, but like ways that you can temper your mental health while betting to ensure that you're having both a safe and good experience mentally. Can you recall on any things that you did or changed or different perspectives that you had from becoming a better, however many ever years ago till now, that drastically improved sort of your day-to-day, week-to-week mental experience in betting sports?
You should ask my girlfriend this question, right? Because like I check scores, right?
Yeah.
And I probably check scores way more often than I should, right? Yeah. But like it was so funny. I had Mark Borchard, who goes by the name Base Winner.
I heard him call you out.
Yeah, he called me out, right? So we've been on. Mark Borchard and I have known each other for 11 years, something like that. And we used to go to spring training baseball games in Arizona. We're nerds. We would like invent advanced metrics. We're ridiculous, right? We're like total dorks. And anyway, like in those days, we would go to dinner in Arizona. This is like 7 or 8 years ago now, right? So he's on my show because we still have him on the show. It's super great baseball numbers guy, runs his own numbers, originates. I can't get enough of him to this day. And I don't know how it came up on the show the other day, but like all of a sudden, 7 years later, he brought up me looking at scores at dinner. And like, I felt so bad that he had sucked this away for 7 years and it was burning in him that I had done that. Right. And I was like, I felt terrible because I'm like, I'm at dinner with him. And by the way, Mike Lamborn, producer number one of A Numbers Game, was with us as well. And I was checking scores while we should have been just having a dinner. So, by the way, there's other people here in Vegas who would tell you, like, when I used to bet baseball, oh, man, I would check scores every 10 seconds. Like, I had ADD, right? Like, it's completely ridiculous. I will check them, you know, when I have a tennis match going on. And I could always improve on that, but I've gotten so much better, right? Like, that was – because here's the thing, Tim, and this just in. This is the biggest revelation of this podcast. You ready?
Yes.
I cannot control the outcome once the bet is submitted. I have learned that. I cannot control the outcome. So what's, you know, like some people are way better at this than I am. Like Las Vegas Chris, who's like a great football bettor, he swears he doesn't watch half these games, right? He just waits for the result. Dr. Bob almost wears it as a badge of honor that he doesn't watch games. By the way, I don't believe Bob sometimes, right? Like, I think he's watching more than he's letting on. But those guys are way better at it than I am. And so that has helped me a lot to get better that way, because I was probably like the worst human being on earth with that, right? Like, Jesus Christ, we can't keep this guy's attention for 15 seconds. I remember once here's another example. My oldest best friend, Tommy, who I grew up with in DC, I've known him since I was 6 years old. We've known each other. We know each other as well as two human beings could know each other. And when TweetDeck first got on my computer screen, on my desktop computer, I was like addicted to TweetDeck. This is like 2011, 2012. Don't hold me to the year. I might have the year wrong, but it's like a long time ago, right? And I remember getting distracted on my phone calls with him. And finally, he was like, dude, just call me when you're not distracted, right? And like, I felt terrible. That was the last time I ever did that. So yeah, like certain stuff like that, you get better at. I don't know if I answered your question, but that's where I went with it anyway.
Yeah, I think that's, there's definitely a, you know, checking scores on sports bets, win or lose, can have, you know, impacts to your life around you. Even if you go a week of winning, if you're constantly checking scores, that can have a negative impact on your life around you, right? People at dinner not feel like they're paying attention to stuff like that, right?
No, it just makes you a shitty human being, right?
Yeah.
So
you're probably one of the more humble people in this space that I know, and definitely look at both your experiences and your success professionally and as a better with gratitude. Rufus, who I cannot wait to talk more about this, tweeted out the other day, ego is negative EV.
Yes.
And I'm not even going to have a question on this. I just want you to, that one statement, ego is negative EV, whether you apply it to yourself or things that you've witnessed around you with other bettors, like how true does that ring? And do you have an anecdote to tie to it?
I mean, ego is negative EV, right? Like that's such a appropriate comment for all of this. I don't want to speak for Rufus, and Rufus is going to be far more interesting guest than I am on this subject, because he and I, some of the best conversations we've ever had are about this particularly, not about any prediction of any game or any bet. He's a numbers guy, and he has always said to me, like, the more that his opinion or the more that narrative gets in the way, right, of something, the less successful he is, right? So, like, that's just how his brain works. Yeah, ego. I'm just trying to think. Like, if you have a pre-flop bet on a series, we're in the middle of the NBA and NHL playoffs, and you know, it doesn't help if I say it on air that I believe in this team. There's no point in my ego getting in the way if I'm clearly going to be on the wrong side of something as the series progresses. I'm just giving a hypothetical now. So if I were to just, you know, double down on dumb just because my ego got in the way, right? Obviously, that would be a ridiculous straight example of how it could get in the way in sports betting. I can't think of a specific example, but it's 100%. It's 100% negative EV. As a sports bettor, the better you can do towards removing all of that subjectivity from your analysis, the better off you will be in the end, the more successful you will be in the end, for sure.
Yeah. Gil Alexander, host of A Numbers Game. You also have like some show you do with a couple other dudes on weeknights, but you almost never talk about it, so I won't mention it here. A little context for you. I took last week off for mental health reasons. And when I did that, I was like, you know what? I want to make this month actually addressing this because I think it's important. I think we do. I think that we as content creators, as companies, as members, we touch on it like either when it's a hot point or when in, or like that one time we can. I decided I wanted to sort of dedicate a few episodes to get a bunch of perspectives. And I knew that I wanted your perspective because I started listening to your podcast a decade ago. And I remember way back then you talking about the psychology of being a bettor, and that was a lead context into mental health in sports betting from my standpoint. So I'm glad we were able to make this happen and glad you took the time to do this.
You're very kind to say that. And I will say, for those who are unfamiliar with you, your work early days also, you've always, even though we didn't call it mental health at the time, you've always been sort of on the cutting edge of this when you were doing some of the veteran, you know, more serious subjects, even right with veteran suicide. Yeah. So you've always really been on this topic. And so good on you for that, man.
Thanks, Gil. I will be in Vegas in about a month. I hope to see you then.
Yes, please. Count on it.
Big thanks to Gil for joining me. You know, it's always easiest to start off things like this with a friend. You know, I wanted to not only talk to Gil because of, I know he had some really interesting perspectives on this, but also because I knew the conversation would be easy to have. So it was good to start with Gil there. Okay, little administrative notes here. Today, in fact, maybe just a few hours after I post this, I am posting the first Patreon episode featuring Mr. Eric Rosenthal. That'll be available on Patreon. It won't happen quickly, so probably not this month, but probably sometime in June, I will have a way for people who are interested in listening to these episodes but don't necessarily want to get involved with Patreon. There will be a way for you to sort of make a one-time contribution and then have access to this feed. I got to figure out exactly how that's going to work, but I can assure you that's coming. For those of you that I know a lot of you are interested in hearing these conversations. And let me tell you, we just got done recording a couple hours ago. Man, it was like old times. It was definitely Better Life 2.0, which is what we're going to call it. I think we're just going to call it Better Life 2.0, even though we're at version 3.5 here. Version 4.0 on the horizon. Not quite sure. I don't want to talk too much about maybe some of the tweaks that I'm making, but I have yet again another sort of adjustment going on in my professional life. Little weird over here for those of you wondering if I'm actually gainfully employed or struggling in my vocation. It's quite the opposite. I'm dealing with juggling some good opportunities and making sure I don't overinvest myself in them or squander them. So it's a bit tricky over here. But as that falls into place and as I sort of reassess my personal life here in the coming 20 episodes or so, I will start thinking about what sort of maybe the next year of the better life looks like and adjust accordingly if there are adjustments to make. But better life version 4.0, I think, on the horizon. Pittsburgh tomorrow, if you're listening to this on day, this is dropping on Friday the 13th. Hope good luck with all your bets out there if you're making them on Friday the 13th. Tomorrow, May 14, I will be up in Pittsburgh. This is starting to turn. This is becoming a little bit smaller than maybe we had hoped, but that's okay. This isn't a Vegas vacation. This isn't a gamble palooza. This was just a, hey, I'm going to be in the area. Let's hang out at a casino for a few hours, and that's essentially what this is going to end up being. So I plan on getting into Pittsburgh in midday. I'm hoping to be there by noon if I can. And then hoping to be at Rivers Casino there in Pittsburgh as early as 1 p.m. There's going to be a meetup at Spiral Bar at 3 p.m. and nothing formal or anything. I may be at the bar. I may be sort of standing up and about, sipping on my drink, whatever it may be. But that's where I'll be. I'll be at Spiral Bar. If you're there before 3 p.m., hit me up on Twitter or something, or come find me. I'm sure you'll recognize me or you'll be able to find me. Otherwise, hope to see people at the Spiral Bar at 3 p.m. And then around 5:45 is when I intend on heading out to the soccer match. Maybe a little bit before that, depending on what the weather looks like. Now, the weather is the big sort of variable in how my day ends up going. If the weather delays or postpones the soccer match, then I will hang out at Rivers for a little while longer. If not, I will likely go to I plan on going to the soccer match over the Pittsburgh Riverhounds match. I am no longer doing the Sunday meetup at Meadows. I'll say it one more time. I said this on Twitter. I'm saying it here. I'll make sure to repeat it on Twitter. Hopefully everybody hears this before showing up wondering, where are you? I didn't hear anything from the last time, from a couple weeks ago when I said, hey, if you plan on being at either one of these, please let me know now, even if you've already told me before, so I sort of have a recount on what's happening. Had a few people say, hey, hope to see you at Rivers. No one said anything about Meadows. With the way my weekend is starting to shape up on like when I need to start heading back to DC and stuff like that, and maybe it was easiest for me to just cut Meadows out of the equation. Hopefully, I can do something there at a later date because I want to check it out. But right now, Rivers on Saturday seems to be it. I will be there as early as 1 p.m. I'll be hanging around there until about 5:30, 5:45-ish, and meet up at Spiral Bar at 3 p.m. Super casual. Nothing formal. Show up. Let's find some gambling to do together, whether that's video poker at a bar or playing at a table or walking around wishing we could get on a table that's full, whatever it may be. That's where I'll be until the soccer match. Going to the casino after the soccer match is really dependent on how I feel after the soccer match. If the soccer match has been delayed at all because of weather, yeah, that's pretty much those two things. How I feel after the soccer match. Look, being at the casino, interacting with people is a lot of energy. Then go to a soccer match, it's also going to take a lot of energy. There's a good chance that after the soccer match, I'm ready to just go back to my hotel. So, I think everybody can understand that. So, right now, if you want to hang out on Saturday in Pittsburgh, I'll be there as early as 1. I'll tweet out when I actually get there. And then hope maybe see you guys at the Spiral Bar at 3, and I'll be there at least through 5:30, 5:45 or something like that. So hope to see some of you tomorrow, and yeah, that'll be a little day up in Pittsburgh. Vegas Vacation 11 around the corner. I mean, a month away. Goodness gracious, I cannot believe it is getting closer. I'm going to be at Circa on the 11th and 12th. I'm going to be at Mirage on the 13th and 14th. And I will pretty much be at all of the events that Vegas Vacation has set up. I will definitely be at the meet and greets. What do they call? I opened up the wrong tab. Here we go. At the meet and greet at Vegas Vicky's on the night of the 12th. That's the Sunday. I will definitely be at the bar crawl in the Arts District at noon or in the afternoon on the 13th. I will definitely be at the family meet and greet at Mirage Center Bar on the night of the 13th. I'll definitely be a part of group gaming on both the night of the 12th and the 13th. And then on the 14th, I will be at the cocktails event, I will be at the cigars event, and I'll hang around for some group gaming afterwards. So I intend on being at all of those. Maybe if there's anything that I end up missing, maybe I duck out early when it comes to gambling, the social engagement part of it. I plan on being at each thing. I will not be at the exercise experience, though, on the morning of the 14th. Might try to get some pool time in on the morning of the 14th. That's likely what I'll try to do probably there at Mirage. I get on the 11th. I'm going to a soccer match that night for the Las Vegas Lights. Other than that, I don't really have any plans on the 11th. I've talked to some people about maybe hanging out that evening before I head to the soccer match, something like that. But if you're around, let me know. Again, I'll be downtown at Circa for those couple days. I think that's it. I think I've covered everything. We have a couple pools going on. We have a couple Better Life 13 run MLB pools. Someone won the first one. He calls himself the Greek god of handicapping. He had the Cleveland Guardians, and he hit the Guardians for him hit every iteration of runs from 0 to 13. Congratulations, William. I know you're out there. I will be following up soon on what you've won. Congratulations on the win. Okay, that's it. Thank you for listening. Coming back next week. On behalf of Gail Alexander, I am Timothy Lawson. Good night. Good luck.